We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
New world order.
New world order.
This is a moment to seize. The kaleidoscope has been shaken. The pieces are in flux. Soon they will settle again. Before they do, let us reorder this world around us.
A new world order.
A world where the United Nations is poised to fulfill the historic vision of its founders.
Nevertheless, the United States is in a key position to shape this so that the problem of the Bush presidency will be the emergence of a new international order.
The first decade of the 21st century, that out of what is will be seen as the greatest restructuring of the global economy, greatest restructuring of the global economy, greatest restructuring of the global economy, a new world order was created.
Documenting the crisis of our republic.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
Waging war on the new world order.
The councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
This is Govern America with Darren Weeks and Vicki Davis.
From FEMA regions 5 and 10, this is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. Vicki Davis is here as well. It is the 30th of March, 2024. Nice to have you with us once again, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't really want to talk about this subject, but I think it's kind of important to at least mention here at the outset of the broadcast. We had this situation with this bridge collapse in Baltimore this week, and this has been playing out all week. And there's a number of different theories about this, and I wanted to kind of get into this a little bit briefly here at the outset. But good morning, Vicki. We got Vicki on the phone today. She's had a little trouble with her Skype this morning. Can you hear me okay?
Good morning. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, very good. I'll have to boost your audio just a smidge here. I don't know. What do you think of this this bridge collapse in Baltimore, Vicki?
The first thing I thought of was the Exxon Valdez.
Yeah.
And that it probably was not an accident.
Well, that's kind of interesting, because the first thing I thought was that it was an accident. In fact, I've been kind of teetering on that all week. In fact, most of the time I've really believed it was an accident. It wasn't until I heard Laura Logan, and I wouldn't have probably taken it seriously, except for one caveat I have to mention here, and that is, this is the type of an attack, if it was an attack, this is the type of an attack that I would expect from either China or Russia. They don't want to get tangled up in the United States military, a direct conflict with the military. And so this would be the type of thing that you would expect, something that's got some degree of plausible deniability, but yet has a big impact. And
Well, it's the kind of thing that China, as far as I know, China invented asymmetric warfare, war without fighting. And terrorist attacks fit right into that category.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of like hit and run.
Right. Yeah. Laura Logan came out and put her reputation on the line. You know, as I can see it, this woman really has nothing to gain by doing this. She doesn't need attention. She's already famous. She's been long considered a credible journalist. So her reputation really would suffer, actually, if she was putting out information like this that was not so. And she makes it very, very clear in no uncertain terms. She's very emphatic about this being an attack. So I think it's worth at least listening to what she's got to say about it. And people can judge kind of for themselves. For those that maybe have been hiding under a rock all week, the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore collapsed after a ship, a container ship, crashed into one of the supporting, you know, pier, what do you call those things? The piers, the support columns.
I think the support columns. But isn't it amazing that the name of the bridge is the Francis Scott Key Bridge?
Yeah, that's been pointed out. And I bet you when they rebuild it, it probably won't be named the Francis Scott Key Bridge. That would be my guess.
Yeah, probably. should be named the Dragon Bridge.
The Dragon Bridge? Oh, yeah, for the China thing?
Yeah.
Well, you never know. It might be. Maybe they'll just go ahead and name it the Mao Zedong Bridge. What do you think?
Yeah, there you go.
So, anyway, I guess we shouldn't joke about this because it's a pretty dire situation. This is one of the major shipping lanes for the country. Anyway, this is, again, Laura Logan, former CBS journalist who finally was kind of pushed out of CBS and went out on her own, just like Cheryl Atkinson did. And she's been doing great work for a long time. And so I have a lot of respect for Laura Logan. And so it really is kind of...
She's one of the smartest news people out there.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
This isn't just some blowhard on the internet. This is somebody who would be in a position and has been for many, many years to establish relationships with people inside the intelligence establishment. And she is somebody who would be in the position to be able to talk to people that she knows and trusts to ask their opinions about things. And this is, she comes away pretty emphatic about this. So listen.
Elements within U.S. intelligence. It's a very simple technique and it's called.
Let me start that over because we were having a little bit of an audio problem there. Let me start it over.
Elements within U.S. intelligence have identified this as a cyber attack. It's a very simple technique, and it's called spoofing in the intelligence community. And basically what you do is you identify what is the GPS signal, we all know this is satellite-based, that the ship is using to power its, you know, its GPS and to guide that ship on its course. And you create a more powerful signal, so you overwhelm the signal that they're using. And what this means is effectively whoever is on that ship piloting it, which in, when you're inside the port, the person that is piloting that is the harbor pilot. And this is governed by maritime law. This is not something that is random or arbitrary. There's an official line of demarcation for any ship that's coming into the port. Before you cross that line, the harbor pilot has to come up. He has to board the ship. He has to go to report only to the ship's captain. There's a formal transfer. There are formal words prescribed by maritime law that are spoken between the harbor pilot and between the ship's captain. The captain hands over formal control of the ship, and then you have the pilot that's in charge. Then when the ship is leaving the harbor, right, because once you're in the harbor, that is, there's complex maneuvers that are required, and that is not trusted to the captain of every ship that comes in. You are a trusted and trained harbor pilot who's responsible for that. And so then when the ship is going to leave the port, right, which is, you can see in the video that the port is behind the ship, right? So as it's leaving the port, when it crosses the second official line of demarcation, at that point, the harbor pilot has now handed, under maritime law, he has handed control of that ship back to the ship's captain. And the ship is supposed to follow its GPS signal. So the pilot on board, now, if when that pilot is on board, a complex maneuver like that has to be handled by the harbor pilot. So he's watching his GPS signal, and it's telling him that he is on course, that everything is fine. But now he's looking at what he sees, and it doesn't look the same as what's on the GPS. And so then they start to panic, right? And as they realize that they're in a really bad situation, they're now trying, in all likelihood, right, what they're trying to do is everything that they can to stop it. But at a certain point, physics takes over. The weight of the ship, the weight of the cargo, the speed of the water, the sharpness of the turn, there's nothing that you can do at that point to change the trajectory that you're on. So you, even the harbor master, who's sitting there like an air traffic controller, who's watching everything that's going on, when he's watching it, it looks like you're on course. So he is not aware, and there's a delay between that reaction. So essentially, this is not a complex operation. In some respects, the hacking is quite simple and easy to do. We are very familiar with the technique, and for them to rule it out from the very beginning is profoundly dishonest, according to the sources that I have, many sources I'm talking to.
Many sources that she's talking to. What do you think so far, Vicky?
I think that that's very disturbing. But one thing I don't understand about what she's saying is that I thought that the tugboat harbor master is the one who actually takes the ship into port.
Yeah.
Because
that is what happens. That's maritime law, and she explains that I think in the next clip with her. They come to a certain point. And then they can't go any farther until they have the, I don't know if it's the harbor master is what they call it, but the person, so somebody from the, somebody local comes and boards the ship and navigates that vessel through the harbor because there's a lot, because they're most familiar with the harbor. And so they avoid problems that way. And apparently that's maritime law that they have to do that.
That's changed since my understanding. Because I thought that the tugboat captain actually tows the ship into port. So the tugboat captain is in charge of navigation to the port. But it could have changed, you know, since I looked at this last, which was, I guess, at the Exxon Valdez.
Interesting. I don't know the specifics of what the person's title is. Now, one thing I did find kind of bothersome is how quickly they ruled out terrorism. I mean, the investigation hadn't even gotten started, and they're already ruling out stuff. How do you rule out anything when the investigation is not only incomplete, but it really wasn't even begun yet?
Yeah, that's a big clue that this is some kind of, well, it's a terrorist act for sure.
Well, but that's exactly what the Maryland governor, Wes Moore, did. He announced at a press conference, no, it's not terrorism. We've preliminarily ruled that out.
The preliminary investigation points to an accident. We haven't seen any credible evidence of a terrorist attack.
So Laura Logan was on the war room with Steve Bannon, and she attack that statement right there.
Why are you coming to the mic telling the country that it's not terrorism when your own intelligence agencies are telling you it is? And I know they are, because I didn't make this up. These are not my words, right? I'm talking to people who are on the inside, some who are on active duty, some who are retired, and everyone, literally, from critical infrastructure in Department of Homeland Security to the intelligence agencies, they know there's no other. This is a cyber attack on a critical infrastructure corridor for the United States. This is, you know, for those people who think this is just a river, this is in Baltimore, what does this matter? You don't know anything about what you're talking about. This, the I-94 corridor on the eastern seaboard, is literally what connects the north and south. And when I talk about hazardous materials, right, this is a brilliant, well-planned strategic attack on one of the most important supply chains in the United States of America. The only other one is in the western side in California. That's the only one that's busier. And what you have done, you now have shut it down. And when I talk about hazardous materials, what are we talking about here? This is refined fuels, right? This is propane gas. This is diesel. This is fuel. This is flammable materials. This is oversized loads, nitrogen, chemicals. Everything that you need for your economy to move has literally just been shut down for 4 to 5 years. And how did they do it? They knew that they had to target one of two main anchor points on that bridge. There are two load-bearing pylons that any structural engineer can identify that are on the end of each side of the bridge. These are the ones that are thicker and stronger than anything else on that bridge. And when you hit one of those pylons, when you take that out, the reason you see so much of that bridge collapse instantly is you just bought 50% of the span of that bridge coming crumbling down. And what you don't see beneath the surface of the water, Steve, is absolutely catastrophic. It is a structural nightmare and a logistical nightmare, because you have the entire bottom part, the concrete part of that bridge, and you don't know the extent of the structural damage to that. And you won't know it until you pull all of that infrastructure out of there and you get to look at it. And so you're talking 3 to 5 years at best. And what you're talking about here is probably building a new bridge. So what you have effectively done now, you've shut down the I-95 corridor that's above ground. So now you're going to have to go north to New York. You're going to have to go south to North Carolina. And your trucks, your hazardous materials are going to have to go around Baltimore now. They're not going to be able to go through it. And what else did you do? You shut down the sea corridor, the shipping corridor, because now the port is shut down, right? And so all those tankers that are out at sea that have hazardous materials on them, those are going to have to all be rerouted. And why can you not move hazardous materials through the tunnel? Why is this such a big deal? Because they created that bridge because hazardous materials, for example, oversized loads, they don't fit in the tunnel system. Yep. And there's other loads that are so dangerous that they require a permit. It takes time to get a permit. It costs money to get a permit. It requires an escort, right? You've seen it on the highway sometimes. You've seen when you have these massive oversized loads and they've got escorts all around them, these huge convoys. Well, what do you do on one of the busiest corridors in the United States? You don't shut it down in the day so this can happen. That means you can only move this stuff at night, which automatically impacts the amount of traffic that you can use. The tunnel is going to be overloaded. This is what you call death by a thousand cuts. It is an absolutely catastrophic attack on critical infrastructure, and you cannot see it because a cyber attack is unseen. Just like the attack on 2020 on the voting machine that you cannot see.
Okay, I want to go. You just had this big thing with the FBI talking about the Chinese Communist Party's cyber hacking unit that they've been monitoring for 10 years, and now they're saying it's out of control. Are your sources telling you that they feel that there's enough information out there that it is a cyber attack, and is it a state actor or non-state actors?
100%, yes. And they are saying that this is a cyber attack. You didn't have a terrorist group board the ship and commandeer it and take it over. You had somebody hack into the systems on board the ship, the GPS system, and reroute that ship.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that last week we were talking about the possibility of a CIA role in this Moscow concert venue attack on this show. And we came to this microphone and we said that we believe it was the CIA. They claimed it was ISIS, but we know where ISIS comes from, folks. The Israeli Mossad and the CIA. These are the proxies that the United States government ultimately created. So, certainly Russia has come out and said that they've traced these people after they've done their interrogation. They've traced these people back to Ukraine. Well, who's funding the war in Ukraine? It's the State Department. And now this week, we come and we have this bridge collapse. And so this is the type of an attack, if it was an attack, that I would expect. And in fact, I told my wife, you know, because we were talking about, you know, well, you know, Russia bombing us. And Russia's not going to bomb us. I don't think that that's going to happen. I think the kind of attack that you would expect would be something cyber related. It would be something that would have some element of plausible deniability against a soft target, rather than no country wants to go toe to toe into direct conflict with the United States military. So consequently, it would be this type of an attack. Why the administration wouldn't come out and say it? Well, maybe, I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe they know they can't do anything about it, or they run the risk of starting World War III, except that I really kind of think they want World War III to get started. I don't know how insane these people are. I think they're pretty insane because they're flirting with worldwide disaster. Maybe there's some kind of pause in there that somebody has that, wait a minute, we don't want a direct thermonuclear war. We don't want a direct conflict with a nuclear power. One would hope that there's some kind of sane mind somewhere in this administration that would think that way, that maybe we shouldn't do these things, but yet they've been flirting with it for many years and using these proxy wars to try to accomplish certain means covertly and often not so covertly. It's pretty transparent, actually, if you know what to look for. I don't know. You have any additional thoughts on this, Vicki?
Yeah, I do. I think the United States is, and it pains me to say this, but it seems to me like, you know, with everything that I've been looking at for the past 2 weeks almost, that China was actually ahead of the United States in technology. IBM actually moved over to China in I think it was 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure, you know, that was like a business decision because you've got this gigantic country that has virtually no technology. So, but, you know, from 1980 forward, IBM was over there in Shenzhen, and Shenzhen was the first special economic zone over there. And so I don't think we can look at the Chinese as not being technologically capable.
Yeah.
I kind of think that it's the U.S. that's behind the eight ball.
Yeah, I agree. And technologically capable, they recognize that is their only real strength at competing or defeating or weakening the United States is through technological means. You know, and they've been at this for a long time. Every place where the United States military and leaders have given ground, they've been freely able to take. You know, I can remember us having a certain professor on this show more than once, actually, but it was many years ago. Where Bill Kaufman was his name, and he was testified before Congress about how the military weapons, he was told to give his technology that he developed. He perfected nose cone technology and projectiles for NASA, propulsion and nose cone technology for which NASA adopted some of his stuff. He was told to give that over to Harbin Institute, a delegation from Harbin Institute, which is the Chinese communist school where the People's Liberation Army go to learn how to do warfare. And he says, I'm not going to do that. And that was at the University of Michigan, and they canceled his classes. Ultimately, he went up the chain complaining about this. Why are you sending delegations? Why are you welcoming delegations from Harbin Institute in here and expecting me to give our secret information to Harbin Institute? And they called him a racist. He doesn't like Chinese people. I mean, this is insane what's been going on here. And, could never get any attention to it, finally got fired and, you know, made some rounds on certain shows like ours. And that was about it. I don't even know. It's been years since I talked to Dr. Kaufman. But nothing was ever done about it, despite his testimony before Congress. And the beat goes on, listeners. This has been going on a very, very long time. You know,
I have a package of documents that he sent to me. I'm going to have to scan those documents and put them online.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I was going to go a certain direction on this show, and I think I've decided to change course because of what we're talking about is too important. We've got all these migrants coming into the country now. Many of them Chinese military age people. Here we see from Breitbart, Joe Biden spikes immigrant population to 51.4 million people. Listeners, 51.4 million people. While we're talking about the possibility of having attacks, cyber warfare, and you talk about the ultimate soft target, what about the power grid? What about the power grid?
Yeah.
You know, the more smart stuff, Agenda 21 smart meters and smart stuff, these are all computers. And this is being pushed off more and more, made more and more vulnerable to because they're putting it all online. It's accessible. The more accessible you make it, the more vulnerable it's going to be. I got one more clip from Laura Logan, but I don't really have time to play it before the break. Did you have something you were going to say?
I probably don't have time to say it before the break.
Yeah, go ahead.
But, well, local cooperatives, there was something I was reading, and I'll find it again because I'm putting up All Things China. I haven't decided yet whether it's going to be a website or a section of my website. I'm kind of thinking that it needs to be a separate website because it's going to get attacked, I know. But it was mentioned in one of the hearings that China was converting their state-owned enterprises into, they were privatizing it into local cooperatives. And I'm thinking now that those local cooperatives may very well have been the infrastructure for the fusion centers. If you look at all of the agencies or functions of government that hook into a fusion center, and you look at that as a local cooperative.
Okay, hang on. We'll be back here.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannahSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
homeowners. Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email tom@republicbroadcasting.org. tom@republicbroadcasting.org.
The spooks go to find out what's really going on. This is Govern America.
Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America. The website for the show is governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com. My email address is radio@governamerica.com. Vicki, go ahead and give your information out, please. And you were just talking about China, and it's kind of, you know, we know that China is a laboratory for all the experimental things that the technocrats are trying to push upon the general population everywhere. And so they experiment on the Chinese people because they don't have any freedom over there, and so they can pretty much do whatever they want. And so you were saying before the break that the Chinese state-owned enterprises, they're turning them into local cooperatives. And you were saying that you believe that that's kind of like what kind of is a model for our fusion centers here. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, and the smart cities. And if you look at, I have a chart of the fusion center relationships. And at the center it's a triangle, actually. There is transportation management, and then the emergency operations center, and then the fusion center. And it's at the fusion center where all of the functions of government come together.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make sure and put that in the show notes, because that's one of the most important diagrams of the structure of the technocratic tyranny, what I call the technocratic tyranny that I found. And I would remind everybody that it was IBM that came up with the idea of the smart city, which is full technocratic management of a city.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would, you know, whatever China had in the way of infrastructure, they would have developed that with IBM.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
helping. And so, I want to remind people that this is my analysis, and I do go out and gather up as many supporting documents as I can find. But the idea that the technocratic takeover of our country started so far back is kind of I knew 92 was an important year,
mm-hmm.
Just, you know, because I knew that. But if I'm right on this, then China controls our country. So we're kind of screwed.
I think that China is working in tandem with the State Department and with the Biden administration. And I think that there's a synergistic thing going on here at a higher level. And so a lot of the stuff that's going on, I mean, because look, here's the thing. why in the world would they, number one, give China our industries? Why would they give them, why would they hand over the industry through so-called free trade? That's point number one. That's clue number one. Then secondly, you know, you have China becoming increasingly hostile to the United States and literally planning for war. One of their people threatened to bomb Los Angeles at one point. This was several years ago. There has been a hostility toward the United States because of Taiwan, U.S. foreign policy on Taiwan. And yet their students are being welcomed over here in the universities. They're being welcomed at various other places. And we're welcoming them in through our borders. Why would there not be border security? I guess that's the thing that I keep coming back the most to is, you know, this, the millions of people that have come in here, you know, and they're saying it's 51.4 million. Well, we've only had a little over 300 million people in our country. Yet we have 51.4 million people, up by 6.4 million people since Joe Biden took office, according to the Center for Immigration Studies. And that's being cited by an article in Breitbart. You know, and in the meantime, we have another caravan coming, 2,000 strong, some say 3,000, but it's over 2,000 people on their way right now, traveling through Mexico. Where are all these people coming from? Who's financing this? We are. We are, yeah. Because we're paying for the United Nations. As a matter of fact, I probably have the audio here somewhere. Yeah, here it is. This is a gentleman from the Center for Immigration Studies on Fox News. He's talking about it. The United Nations is paying for all these NGOs, and we're paying for the United Nations.
They're not just coming here on their own dime. The United Nations, it turns out, is spending hundreds of millions of dollars in cash handouts, food, shelter, something called humanitarian transportation. Really every human need that is required to make the long journey through Latin America, Central America, and Mexico. And who pays the UN? Who's the UN's major funder? It's the U.S. taxpayer is paying for this. How do we know this? Because there's a brand new budget document that the UN puts out for 2024. They're going to spend $1.6 billion to help 3 million illegal immigrants move through 17 different countries of Latin America and the Caribbean and Mexico. And that includes $370 million in cash cards, debit cards, $25 million in transportation assistance to help them move through. And the budget document also clearly shows that they are witting, that they know that these are illegal immigrants and that they are moving illegally through their own member states. And they're using 248 NGOs to help hand out the cash.
What do you think of that? This is nothing short of treason.
It doesn't surprise me a bit. They've been doing this. And that when I first started researching, that was one of the things that captured my attention, was that our border was being invaded by what I thought were Mexicans, but I think probably from all South American countries. And that's when a number of different groups, there was a guy named Chris Cox who had a group, and then there was American Patrol with Glenn Spencer, and they organized militias to help put a stop to the invasion of our border.
Mm-hmm.
So since then, what I think what they're doing is rebalancing the world's population, because if you're the very nature of computer systems is centralization of management of whatever entities that you're managing. That's the way corporations work. That's the way government works. But they started this relationship with China back in 1972. There was something called the Shanghai Communique.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found out this morning that it was Henry Kissinger who was one of the negotiators of it.
Mm.
And that was Nixon's opening of China. But, you know, at the point we are today, you have to wonder, you know, who opened who?
Yeah.
You know, did China open us or did we open them? And I think China opened us, actually. But there were two other agreements. Yeah, when I read the Shanghai Communique, it sounded to me like it was the same deal as with Hong Kong, except that it was an earlier version. And that's one country, two systems.
Right.
So you have the idea of China being the defender of Taiwan. And that's what they call the One China policy. Our government agreed that Taiwan was a part of China. So all this crap about, you know, Taiwan being an independent country, that's propaganda. That's BS.
Yeah.
The policy of the United States has been a One China policy since 1972.
Incidentally, so, regarding the border situation, remember we talked about the omnibus bill, 101 House Republicans. In that bill that these 101 House Republicans voted for was almost $4 billion for migration and refugee assistance.
Uh-huh.
So I'm looking at the part of the bill right now, Department of State Migration and Refugee Assistance. And they say for necessary expenses and otherwise provided for to enable the Secretary of State to carry out the provisions of Section 2A and B of the Migration and Refugee Assistance Act of 1962, 22 U.S.C. 2601, and other activities to meet refugee and migration needs, salaries, and expenses of personnel and dependents as authorized by the Foreign Service Act of 1980. And it's, you know, anyway, 3.9 billion dollars, $3.9 billion,
uh-huh.
almost $4 billion to go to this, to migration and refugee assistance. And the Republicans, these 101 traitors, I'll just call them what they are, voted in favor of that. So there you go. I think every single one of them, I said it before, I'll say it again, every single one of them needs to be primaried out. You know.
Well, given the strategy of how they came, I think they're implementing, I think you could say it's one country, two systems in the United States as well. And these local cooperatives that they formed, you know, including the utility company, the transportation planning, the hospital, the 911 services, law enforcement. If you look at that as an organizational structure, and then you compare what Congress was doing when I first started looking at this, which was all the congressmen were like pigs feeding at the trough, trying to get their earmarks in.
Mm-hmm.
Building this cooperative system, for building the fusion center system. And I found that when I was working with Amanda Teagarden in Oklahoma. So I'm not just talking about something that was just happening in Idaho. This was happening in Oklahoma, too.
Right.
And so we researched it together. Because her governor at that time had been a member of Congress and got a big earmark for this Native American company that turned out to be a telecommunications company. So I mean, if you put all of these pieces together, we've had a technocratic coup.
Yeah.
And that was done in cooperation with the European countries. You know, it was the G7, or they might have been G8 at that time when Russia was a member. They decided on building these global systems.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at all the countries in the world, there's no country better or more familiar with big systems because of the size of their population. They understand big systems.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to get back to the bridge incident, one, you know, just to finish up with that, because I didn't really put a pin in that whole situation. We kind of got off on the border issue, and that's my fault. But I wanted to finish up. I had one more clip from Laura Logan. She had some very good things, important things to say, and I think you would agree with this. This is Laura Logan on the Steve Bannon War Room Show.
We are in an undeclared war right now. And these are not my words. I'm not making this up. This is coming from people who really know and who ordinarily would never, ever talk to me. But we've reached a point in this city. I think, you know, if you look at the quote of one of the intelligence analysts that I spoke to, he said they have figured out how to bring us down. As long as you stay away from the teeth of the U.S. military, you can pick the U.S. apart. We are arrogant and ignorant, a lethal combination. Obama said they would fundamentally change America, and they did. We are in a free fall ride on a roller coaster right now. No brakes, just picking up speed. And I would urge people, watch very carefully the people that tell you that this attack doesn't matter. Stop following them on Twitter. Discount everything they say because they're either totally ignorant and useless or they are a plant. We have very, very little time. When you start to shut down, you know, hazardous materials and the shipment of fuel, you know what that means. It means everything goes up. It means food goes down. You know, the access to food and critical infrastructure, that means that goes down, prices go up. This is catastrophic for the American people, and it's catastrophic for this country. But it is a financial and economic attack. If you're not going to see tanks rolling down the street, stop looking at the type of, you know, conventional war and saying to yourself, well, if I don't see this, then it means we're okay. If people need to understand what they're looking at. And for those people who say, well, you know, the FBI, isn't it interesting? Christopher Wray just put this big counterterrorism guy, you know, he put him in charge of the FBI office of Baltimore just yesterday. And this is the guy that's out in front of the cameras already. Well, isn't that amazing, right? Do you believe in coincidences? I don't. I don't believe in coincidences anymore. None of this happens by chance. This happens by design.
So I think you would probably agree with some, at least some of what she said there. Now,
I agree with everything she said.
Mm-hmm.
And the even though I didn't have the language to talk about it in terms of unrestricted warfare connected to China,
mm-hmm.
I knew there was a war being waged on us, but I couldn't pin it down. You know, I thought it was the technology companies, the telecoms, so I've known about it for a long time, which is why I set up my website, was to try and explain it to people, how everything that was happening in terms of centralization of these systems was, it was a breach of the government wall affecting the people. And now what I can say is that the corporations that are in business in China, with China, they're making war on our country. Our government has partnered with those corporations. And, you know, we are no better than like Steve Bannon always says, you're just a Russian peasant. Or I think actually it's kind of worse than that. You know, we're like the Chinese peasants. We don't count.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I will say, for those that doubt this was an attack, and by the way, that's been, you know, I don't know. I don't have a stake in this one way or the other. I don't care. I mean, I care, but I mean, I don't care. I just want the truth, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And I have pretty much most of the week leaned toward this being just an ordinary accident. Laura Logan, I paid attention to her because I know her history and I have some respect for her as a journalist. I don't think she would come out and say this if she didn't absolutely believe these sources. And it, you know, the thought did cross my mind that maybe her sources are leading her wrong. But it sounds like she's done a lot of groundwork talking to different people in various places, you know, in on the inside. And and they're all telling her somewhere along the same lines. And then I find this little nugget on a website called LBC Leading Britain's Conversation. More than 1,600 European planes hit by mystery GPS jamming with Russia feared responsible. This is an article that just came out March 25th, so just 5 days ago. And it says more than 1,600 planes have been hit by GPS interference in less than 2 days, and it is Russia, and Russia is behind the interference. Now, I don't know how they can tell that, or if they can tell that, but that's what they're claiming here. It says planes flying over and around the Baltic Sea in northern Europe have been suffering technical problems caused by jamming since Sunday, with 1,614 planes, mostly civilian, reporting problems since then. Such interference poses serious issues for pilots, as it can force them to contend with fake signals that give false information about their plane's position in the sky. Now, folks, think about what Laura Logan is just saying about this vessel trying to navigate through this harbor. And what they're saying here, these are completely disjointed, disconnected incidents here. This article came out, and it's not talking at all about this crash into the bridge. This is separate, but it's also GPS jamming. So the GPS jamming is apparently going on in the other places. They say a map posted on X by an open source intelligence account that tracks interference shows incidents widely spread across Poland and southern Sweden. Most of the incidents appear to be taking place in Polish airspace. OSINT blogs have reported that planes flying in German, Danish, Swedish, Latvian, and Lithuanian airspace have suffered interference problems. Notably, little or no interference appears to be taking place in Belarus, a staunch Russian ally, or Kaliningrad, a Russian province separated by the mainland by sea and land. A Lithuanian defense official told Newsweek, Russian armed forces have a wide spectrum of military equipment dedicated for GNSS interference, including jamming and spoofing, at varying distances, duration, and intensity. Those capabilities are used to create an, quote, atmosphere of threat and a sense of helplessness in society, unquote, a Polish defense ministry official said. A Lithuanian defense source told the outlet, Russian armed forces have a wide spectrum of military equipment dedicated to GNSS, Global Navigation Satellite Systems, interference, including jamming and spoofing at varying distances, duration, and intensity. A leading military expert said the Russians' dominance in the electronics war should be a wake-up call for UK's military. Dr. Melanie Garson, Associate Professor of International Security at University College London, told Forces.net, quote, Russia particularly has previously had an edge on this, and they have necessity. The mother of invention over the last 2 years during the war have actually actively solidified their capabilities in this regard. They've had the chance to use it more concretely, and there's a real concern that particularly NATO currently doesn't have that matching capability. So what do you think of that?
Well, I think it's really interesting that the way my thinking is going is that Russia is in as big a problem as we are, because they're on China's border. Mm-hmm. And China has visions of being the global hegemon.
Well, for the time being, Russia and China will be allied. Now, maybe on down the road, there may be other problems. But, you know, for now, they're going to be working together, because the United States State Department's foreign policy has been such to make adversaries of everybody around the world. And that's the problem. We should have been using diplomacy to reach these countries and to subdue them when necessary in a friendly way whenever possible. I don't think that there needs to be this hostility going on, but we've been doing everything around the world, not we, but our State Department, those who are representing us on our behalf, and they've been engineering things to be very provocative. And as a result now, it looks like we could be seeing, and I'm not saying what definitively, because I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I've been studying this situation for a long time, but circumstantial things, anecdotal things at this point, seem to be pointing in that direction. And I guess time will tell. Maybe we'll continue gathering evidence and trying to determine more about this situation. But it does seem like GPS jamming is going on.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Public Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.